When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Missed Apex Podcast. We are an independent podcast produced in the podcasting shed with the kind permission of our better halves. We aim to bring you a race review before your Monday morning commute. We might be wrong, but we're first. Welcome to Inside F1 with Joe Saywood. I'm Spanners, the host and producer of Missed Apex Podcast. That's right, I do two things. We like to bring you a revolving panel of experts and fan voices from every corner of the F1 experience, but we have a returning regular today for the first time in 2022. For those that don't know Joe, he's one of the most experienced motorsport journalists in the world and has attended every race since 1998. Welcome back to the shed, Uncle Joe.
88.
What did I say?
You said 98.
I've made that mistake before.
You always do that.
Yeah, I've made that mistake before.
It means I'm 10 years older than you think I am. So there you are. So
how's things in Joe Saywood world? How's 2021 hitting you, 2022 hitting you so far?
It's been fine. Apart from Russians invading my internet lines, it's been fine. I did have some problems with that. So
that's why you've not been here, yeah.
That's why I couldn't do anything, because basically my internet blew up. Or somebody blew up my internet. Let's put it the other way around. Anyway, there we are.
Lots of people were concerned that we'd had a falling out. That, you know, because you've fallen out with podcasts before, Joe, and I had to reassure everyone.
No, I haven't fallen out with podcasts. Podcasts have fallen out with me.
I had to reassure everyone. No, Joe Saywood is still my close personal friend. In fact, we're even planning a holiday to Las Vegas together next year. Isn't that right, Joe?
Okay. Well, I'm going there. I don't know about you.
But, I'm reading between the lines. But why are we going to Las Vegas?
Because that's where the next Grand Prix announcement's going to be from. Well, actually, it's not. Probably the next announcement will probably be from Doha, saying that they're replacing the Russian Grand Prix this year. But then there will be an announcement soon afterwards saying that we're going to Vegas in 23. And in fact, we'll go on Thanksgiving weekend.
So, oh, wow.
And the race will be on Saturday night, US time. See, unusually for a Grand Prix.
So that's amazing, really, because there's no hint of them pandering to European times. They're like, nope, we'll put it on when it suits us.
No, that's not the case at all, because the race is being promoted by guess who? Formula One, not by a local promoter. So
can you explain the difference to me? Sorry.
Yes, a local promoter is somebody who says, I'll be the promoter, and pays Formula One and collects money from everyone he can collect it from, so the local government, sponsors, etc., etc. Formula One's going to do that role and keep all the money, as opposed to the race promoter who pays a fee and then tries to make a profit.
Oh, I see. So that's an important, interesting difference. So this is F1 have said themselves, we want this race in Vegas.
They haven't said anything yet.
Oh,
I'm telling you what's going to happen. They haven't said a word.
Oh, this is a Joeism. So all those reports I've seen about the Las Vegas Grand Prix, are you the source? It's all come from you.
No, there's a guy in the States who's quite well connected in Vegas by the sound of it, and he's getting stuff too, but we're getting different stuff, which is interesting. And somebody recently I saw had published a map of the circuit. It's completely wrong,
but, because it looked terrible, that map.
Well, it just because it's not right. It's actually the same bit of the strip they use, but on the other side. So if you want me to give you details of exactly where the track will go, it will go down from Caesar's Palace, down past the Bellagio fountains on the right, down to the next junction, which I think is by a thing called the Cosmopolitan. Then it will go round to the left. Fast left. And then it will go, we're not entirely sure of exactly how it'll go, but if you look on a map, you'll find there's lots of areas there which are empty. And it will work its way north until it arrives near the MSG, I think it's called MSG, the MSG sphere, which is this blooming great sphere thing that they're just finishing building. And the track will then go whizzing round the whole of that in a 180-degree turn and then go back along Sands Avenue to Wynn Las Vegas, and then it will turn left onto the strip. There you go.
Can someone in the Patreon Slack group who's been listening to that, can you just draw us a quick map and we'll get something thrown up there?
It's a bit difficult to say exactly where it's going to go when it goes off the strip, because there's lots of possibilities, and they're going to build a pit area somewhere in there because there's loads of parking lots and stuff, but they need to sort of figure out the details, and I don't know the tiny little bits. I mean, I know pretty much everything else, so I'm not doing too badly, but all the sort of fiddly bits, I'm not entirely sure of the actual routing. But you know, if you look on a map, you can see it's fairly there's lots of choices anyway.
So the Brits are going to have to be watching this at, I think, 3 a.m. in the morning.
And No. Why do you think 3 a.m.?
I don't know. Time zones are hard and pointless.
No. But if you start at 10 o'clock at night,
yeah,
and race till midnight, then you're getting up to a sensible kind of... I don't know. But, you know, the thing is, having a race anywhere on the west coast of the United States of America or on the western side of the United States of America is always a bit of a problem because of time zones. But if you go late enough, you can get early morning in Europe, and then you can get the whole of Asia and Middle East at sensible times. So the best time to do it is about 10 o'clock at night. So if you're at 10 o'clock at night, add 7 hours to that, five or maybe six in the morning, depending on, to be honest, because it all changes with these silly time changes. I haven't sort of sat down and worked it out, which that'll be, but... anyway, it'll be early in the morning in Britain. It'll be less early in the morning in Europe. It'll be mid-morning in the Middle East. And in Asia, it will be lunchtime on Sunday. Because if you race on Sunday as normal, everything will be on Monday and nobody will watch because it'll be at work.
Yeah, the Australians just take Monday off to watch Grand Prix. That's what they do.
Well, they have to take 22 weeks off then, don't they?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, look, it's another race in America, in America land, a deliberate push by F1. So that's going to be, you know, Miami, COTA, Las Vegas. What have I missed?
Canada, Mexico and Brazil. They're all in the same time zone. The same time zones, the Americas. You've missed something else. There will be another one, I'm sure.
Tell me what that is.
Well, I don't know, but I did hear of one in Colombia, which sounds very serious and very sensible.
Oh, yeah.
The problem is that most of the countries in the Americas beyond the US and Canada and Mexico are either too poor or politically unstable. So, you know, it'd be lovely to go racing in Argentina, for example, but they can't do it. So apparently there's a thing going down in Colombia which could happen. We'll have to see. There's an election coming up. In a presidential election in Colombia next month, I think. And then we will know if the man who's got the idea is going to actually be successful. But the chances are he will, because Colombians like racing cars.
Yeah, racing cars are brilliant. Stuart points out a potential problem that they won't be allowed to show what happens in Vegas, because what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
That's the old slogan.
What's the new one?
Family place now. Yes, come and meet clowns and eat sandwiches and jelly. It's not the old Vegas where you get gunned down and murdered and hookers and the rest of it. This is the new Vegas, family Vegas, because basically gambling is not cool anymore. And you can gamble everywhere because the state's laws they haven't changed exactly, but there are a lot more casinos than there used to be in the US now. And so Vegas needs to change its image a little bit and become more family friendly.
That's ruined my steak and blackjack
plan. Lots of sporting events and conventions. That's what they're really big at. But they have to fill 150,000 hotel rooms. So it's quite serious business, really.
Okay, so people are concerned there's too much Americanness track-wise. Is there too much?
Why? Why?
I don't know.
If you have divide the world into three time zones, you have the Americas, you have Europe, Middle East, Africa, and you have Asia and the Oceania, or whatever you want to call it. Right now, Europe's got far too many. It's got more than its fair share. Now, okay, Formula One grew up in Europe, but that doesn't mean it has to always only be in Europe. And there are places where Formula One has been for many, many years, like South Africa, for example, aren't on the calendar at the moment. So we got four in the Middle East. We've got 7, 8, 9, 10 in Europe. Mm. And we're going to lose some more European ones for sure.
Yeah, no one complains that there's like three races in Italy, but people seem to be getting upset about the American races.
No. But you see, the thing is that Europeans are Eurocentric. I mean, I include in Europeans British people, although perhaps I shouldn't. But basically, they all think that Formula One should belong to them and not to the whole world, which is a bunch of tosh, really, because Formula One has grown beyond that. Mm. It used to be a European thing, but now it's global. So, they want to be big in China. And really, they should have two races in China. If it's based on population, Europe drops down to a very considerably smaller group of people. And we don't go to places like Baku either, but minor point. You know, Monaco drops off the map completely, actually, which could happen.
Yay.
Which could happen.
Good.
Because, you know, there's no contract.
Is there?
There's no contract for Monaco and Formula One. Well, there isn't a contract this year, actually, but they've done a one-year deal, which is why they've managed to get rid of the Thursday practice.
So this could be the last Monaco?
It could be.
Yay.
The trouble is they're having difficulty negotiating a new deal. The last deal was done 11 years ago by Bernie Eccleston and a man called Michel Boeri, who is now 83, and Bernie Eccleston is somewhere near 100. I don't know. No, he's not. He's 91 and a half, I think. But basically, they think, or Mr. Boeri thinks, that Monaco is always going to be part of the calendar and doesn't want to budge on his demands. Mm. Whereas Formula One has things it doesn't like about Monaco, like the very tatty advertising hoardings, the not very good hospitality arrangements, the
track.
Well, the track is another question. And also the race fee, because Monaco's always had a cheap fee, because it thinks it's more important than all the other races. And I think they need to understand that it's probably not as important as all the other races anymore, because we've got races that are not as big as Monaco necessarily in terms of, European thinking, Monaco is always going to be the biggest thing. If you go to Asia, Singapore is the coolest place. And Monaco is some distant thing that people have heard about. And in America's, Monaco is cool because Monaco's Monaco, they used to show it on ABC. But there's some discussions required, but all the other people are doing their deals rapidly and there's nothing happening at Monaco. So I can foresee a situation. We're going to have a news story at some point saying, is Monaco under threat? Everyone else will sort of catch up with this, or somebody will say something that indicates that this is the case. But right now, after this year's race, there's no contract. And of course, both of them kind of rely on each other, because Monaco without Formula One isn't nearly as cool as Monaco is with Formula One. And Formula One with Monaco, without Monaco, isn't anywhere near as cool as Formula One with Monaco. So they just need to find a balance. I don't know if they will, but they do need also to change the racetrack, because it's just not
dire.
Well, we maybe this year with the new overtaking possibilities.
Okay.
Maybe, but probably not.
Yeah, probably not.
The problem is there isn't a whole lot they can do apart from
there's
some stuff they can do down on the harbour. Around the piscine, that they can play with some corners there to create an overtaking possibility.
I think, it's the modern cars, isn't it? And it's gone on so long that the races without rain, and unless they can just manufacture some rain. What did the Chinese do? Did they dispersed clouds? Is there something you can do to send up in the air to make clouds?
Yes, there is. Absolutely.
Is there?
You can sprinkle the clouds with mercury or something.
Let's do that. I see no downsides. Good. We've solved that one. Monaco in the wet is completely fine.
It's a bit dull to watch, though. It's awful
in the wet.
Wet
it was all right.
If you're out in the spectator area, I was at Monaco in the wet in 1984. And while it was a fantastic race and a very famous race, and a chap called Senna did awfully well, and a chap called Beloff was extraordinary, it was thoroughly miserable. being there. I don't think I've ever been as wet in my life as I was at the end of that race. So it was really, truly horrible. I had to wring myself out completely.
Can I, before we leave tracks, can you just briefly mention Africa? Is that becoming more of a possibility now?
It's a possibility as soon as the South Africans can have a settled enough situation. I mean, they financially, they're beginning to recover. They were going to do it, but there were some electricity crises going on. There's political problems as well, but things are beginning to solve themselves. And the president, Mr. Cyril Ramaphosa, is a mad Formula One fan. And I know this to be true. It's not fake news because I met him at the last South African Grand Prix when he was an advisor to Mr. Nelson Mandela. And Mr. Bernard Ecclestone introduced me to Mr. Ramaphosa and said, you should talk to this bloke.
Oh, really?
And I wrote his name down because I was impressed by him and I knew he was mad about Formula One. And I've been following his career ever since, and blow me down if he didn't become the president. So,
local, so I know local lad done good.
he's very passionate. He's very intelligent. And he's just gradually working his way through all the problems. But as soon as he can do it, yes, we'll go to Kyalami.
Oh, excellent. Because you're right. We should only go to places that are super settled and safe, Joe, right?
Well, that is better than some places.
Okay, so we're going to get to it now. I don't want to, dwell. We're going to try and stick to kind of the things that were involved in Formula One from last weekend. But our listeners do have an awful lot of questions for you, Joe, particularly around kind of the Friday. So I've just picked a few of them out. And I think a lot of it is...
What happened on the Friday?
A lot of people are curious about the relationship between really the drivers and the GDPA and kind of what power they have. So I'll just read a couple of the questions here. So, Joe, Nathan's asking, do you have any more information of what happened Friday in those meetings with the driver and the management? And what was the thing that convinced people to stay? And Paddy said, there's still talk of going back to Saudi. Do you think the drivers will take a stand about not going there because there was a threat to that you might struggle to leave the country? That wouldn't have sat well with me at all. And I know this has some history with the WWE.
I think that's a fake.
Was that a misnomer? Was it okay?
I didn't hear anything of the sort. I think the problem leaving the country would have been everybody trying to do it at the same time. I'd already decided if the race gets called off, I'm just going to go back on the original flight anyway because it'd be such a mess to get out otherwise.
If everybody
wants to change, there's only so many flights. So, that may be somebody getting. Yeah, there was an awful lot of crap written and tweeted and whatever the other things
Hot
are
takes, yeah.
About what was going on. But and I don't think there was very, very much coercion involved. It's up to, if the drivers don't want to race, that's up to them. If the race goes ahead without them, the reserve drivers are happy to step in. So that immediately puts another spin on the whole thing, which is why should the drivers decide what we do? Are they aware of the geopolitical problems involved? Are they more aware than Stefano Domenicali? No, they're not. So that would be the tail wagging the dog, wouldn't it? And to be quite honest, I don't think the drivers should have that power because they don't know as much as Stefano Domenicali does. Now we have to trust that Stefano Domenicali uses the information he has in a good way. But I think he's a pretty trustworthy guy. To be honest, that's my opinion of him anyway. And I would rather make it rely on decisions made by him rather than a bunch of drivers who half of them don't live in the real world anyway. And the other half is, why should they have that power?
You're a hard man, Mr. Saywood. But
no, I'm not. I'm not a hard man. I'm just it's basically the truth of the matter is, why should they have that power? Yes, they're the stars. But should the stars stop a theatre operating if they, because they're not happy with the roof might fall in on their theatre or something. I mean, it's a difficult one in a way because, yes, an explosive-laden drone or a missile landed on an oil tank 5 miles. Anyone who wasn't there got the distance wrong because they used Google directions and that told them the road route as opposed to as the crow flies. 5 miles away, that's a long way. If you grew up in London in the 1980s or 70s, we were regularly being bombed. Things were regularly blowing up. Life didn't stop. You just went on and did it. Okay. You were a little bit perhaps nervous, apprehensive. And maybe if you were going Christmas shopping, you didn't go Christmas shopping in the West End. But, you know, life goes on. And there's no way, there's no logic in the concept that these rebels would blow up the race. It's absolutely against their interest.
Joe, you've reminded me. You've sent me back to like the 80s and 90s, and you're absolutely right. Like there was a constant bomb threat. A car bomb went off on my road, and it was like a curiosity almost. It was like, oh, that was close. You know, we felt it and went, that was close. So, yeah, people on the ground.
I nearly got blown up twice on the same day. And I saw what a bomb does, and it's not nice. And so I did some crazy things after that. That's another story.
So, look, I'm not quite where you are. I think the drivers are entitled to an opinion. And I think it would have been a disaster for the spectacle and the sport if a lot of the top line drivers had just decided to go. So I can imagine why they wanted to persuade them rather than sort of force them to. Do we know what was said to them to make
Can I leap in here? So sure. I didn't say they can't have an opinion. I just don't think they should have the dominant opinion. They should have, like every other stakeholder, they should have their opinion, which they're allowed to voice. But what about the sponsors? What about the TV companies? What about the race promoters? What about everybody else? You know, just because they drive racing cars doesn't mean that they should make the decisions. And that's the point I'm making. The FIA should be involved in all this, but at the moment, it seems to be they're a little absentee in lots of ways. But, you know, they will probably get better as time goes by, as they get their feet under the table more. But, you know, the fact is, if we're not going to go to Saudi again, we have to judge it on a sensible, non-emotional way in a calm environment. So, yes, they have the right to a voice, but they shouldn't have the predominant voice.
No, and you do have to kind of yield to local intelligence and the people who've got the information. And I'm assuming that's what happened to get them to all, quote unquote, agree. I'm assuming they got intelligence and assurances and were satisfied by that.
Yes, intelligence assurances are all very well, you know, but there are already Patriot defence walls in place. And once something got through, now why it got through, how it got through is neither here nor there. It did get through. So anyone giving guarantees that the Patriot anti-missile, anti-drone war will work, it's hard to convince them. However, if they had a political officer, I don't know, Formula One, they used to have a guy who did security stuff. But if you actually just take a step back out of the sport and you look at it, there is absolutely no interest in the Houthis blowing up the Grand Prix. What you want to do is blow up something near a Grand Prix that is an infrastructure element in Saudi Arabia. Guess what? That's what they did. And then they cleverly declared a ceasefire for the 3 days over the weekend, which meant that nobody had to worry about them lobbing another one in. So they made their point. They got the coverage. What it did, it shows how powerful Formula One is as a means of sending messages. And you can do this on Google. You know, you just go to Google and type news, and then get it on the news element, and just type Ferrari and see how many mentions come up of the car company as opposed to the racing team.
Oh, interesting.
It's amazing. No, well, it is, because basically Formula One gets coverage that other stuff doesn't get. So if you blow up a bomb near a Formula One track, then you're going to get coverage for your cause worldwide.
Oh, okay. Before we get into like a tactical help guide for anyone planning future attacks, perhaps we can just talk about the track itself, because this was supposed to be the last year of this track. I don't like it. I wince. You know, you can call me precious or soft all you want, but I was looking forward to this track never being used again. Is that still the case?
No.
No? It's going to be used again?
I don't believe so. I mean, if they're building a new circuit, it should be half finished by now.
Oh, okay, good. So we won't.
So they're probably, I mean, as I haven't seen anything suggesting that the new thing has got to bulldozer stage, I can't imagine. I think the original plan was for 3 years anyway. But we'll have to see. They're going to spend a pile of money for a place near Riyadh, out in the wilds a bit, so not downtown. Whether it will be better, worse, whatever, I don't know. But, you know, it's also a question of, yes, there are certain elements of this track that are quite dangerous because it's fast and there are blind corners.
Yep.
And we saw an element of that when Mick Schumacher crashed. But, you know, you can have big crashes in Baku too, but you don't hear them complaining about the dangers of Baku.
So just do you have any insight on Mick Schumacher? Because obviously he missed the race. He was up and about and he was walking. What's the procedure to decide, you know, and is that going to bleed over into Australia?
No, I don't think so. I mean, he had a very big hit in terms of G-forces. I don't know the number exactly, but it was a big hit. And then the car was in a... Actually, apparently the chassis was all right. Everything else had sort of fallen off it, but the chassis itself was not broken. So there's probably a question of insurance and concussion and these kind of things that the team decided, no, we're not going to have him race, and they not replace him, probably because it's better to have a look at the car, x-ray it and things like that.
To be
honest, I don't know. But, you know, I wasn't surprised by that, because driver chassis combination, it's better to be safe than sorry.
Makes you not hate runoff as much, though, doesn't it, when you see an impact like that?
Yeah, I suppose so. But it is, there's an element to which, I mean, I know it sounds horrid and all the rest of it, but, you know, that's a little bit what racing's about. It's about, you know, it's a bit like Spa, you know. Why, if we're living in a world where nobody can hurt themselves, why do we go to Spa anymore?
But may I counter? We do get rid of other low-hanging fruit when it comes to safety, halo, helmets, right, hands, devices. Yeah. So why not take the obviously very dangerous track elements and do without them?
Well, you can do that. But I think in terms of Jeddah, there's a space problem in as much as there was a space problem at Imola as well. You know, at Tamburello, there is a stream that runs behind the racetrack on the outside there. They could never extend the runoff areas. So that's, you know, they had to then put a chicane in to slow the cars down in that part of the track to get it safe again. So, yeah, you can do it. But I think if you're on one of these, you have to balance practicality, cost, and all these other elements to it. And you also have to say that Formula One is about heroes. It's about what people watch it for is heroism and skill. And people like having heroes. And they don't want, nobody wants to see anyone get hurt, but they want to see somebody doing something they can't do.
So for you,
and
you
nowadays, half the generation play these computer games and think they can do anything. And when they get in a proper race car, they realize they can't. But that's another question, you know, because there's an element of fear you don't get when you're playing a computer game.
Okay, just for the record, before people email, for me, if you took all the danger out of it, I'd enjoy the sporting element. That's not a thing for me. I don't need them there to be a chance they could die. I don't need that, and I don't know if people do need that. That's your kink.
No,
I'm not shaming.
Nobody needs that, but it is always something that you have to bear in mind when you're pushing the barriers of physics.
Yeah,
that's what happens.
And,
you know, that's true in any form of racing. It's not just Formula One. In fact, it's far, far more dangerous to go rallying. It's far more dangerous to go racing IndyCars. You know, but Formula One is incredibly safe.
Sure. Which makes it all the more weird when the low-hanging fruit of blind corners, close walls suddenly appears on the calendar. You go, that feels unnecessary to me anyway. But look, email us feedback@missedapex.net. Toby says, we don't want dead heroes. There you go. I agree with Toby. Okay. You mentioned Spa. Is Spa going to be okay? I mean, they've done loads of work to it.
As long as the Dutch keep coming to motor races, Spa is okay.
Seems like
if the Dutch stop coming to motor races, Spa is in danger.
They seem pretty keen still, Joe.
Well, as long as Max Verstappen is still around, they will be very keen, yes. Mm. And, you know, that's the Orange Army is saving quite a few races at the moment. And in fact, it's probably going to be responsible fundamentally for a new German Grand Prix, which I think we will have in time. But I think it will be an alternation deal with France, if you want my honest opinion. I think we'll have France 1 year and Germany 1 year.
Oh, so Paul Ricard, we lose once every 2 years, which isn't a tragedy.
Hockenheim back, or either Hockenheim, or I don't know, to be honest. I haven't. I've just heard whispers that the Germans are into an alternation deal with the French. So
that's a pretty good deal.
The French can't cope with the cash required. It's too much, and Ricard is the wrong place. So, I mean, as much as it's a jolly nice place to visit, and it's not a bad track. It's got a million things wrong with it. So if they want to have a full-time Grand Prix, they have to build a new circuit somewhere more sensible, and they have to have the money to do the race fees. And that's a lot of money.
Do you know the statistics for our podcast? When there's a German Grand Prix, it is the most downloaded race of the year, our German Grand Prix review, every single year.
Jawohl. I didn't know that. Well, that's fascinating. Yeah. I wonder why that is.
I don't know. I've got no idea. But every single year, the German Grand Prix.
In that case, in a few years' time, you'll probably get a few more listeners then.
Brilliant.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Okay, let's go to a few more listener questions there. This has all been very exciting and thrilling so far, Joe. I do like a bit of track news, but I think also people like to get into your knowledge of the teams. Because you kind of, you have a stalky kind of journalism, don't you? You don't sit there in the press conferences going, asking the questions. You lurk and you like pop out behind hospitality. Go, aha, Stefano, tell me the things. And also I have a photo of you in a compromising position in Las Vegas, so you have to tell me. That's your style.
It's not quite like that.
No?
Yes. As you will notice if you watch press conferences, you'll rarely ever hear me ask a question because what's the point? Everybody gets the answer. I don't want to give the answer to other people. So I ask different questions to different people in different environments and I get better answers, so which I don't have to share until I'm ready to. So obviously that's something I'm fortunate because I've been around a long time. I can do it. But if you're a new guy on the block, you can't do what I do because you don't have access to the people. You don't have the relationships that you built up over a long period of time. If I walk down the paddock, I will come out the other end each time, every single time, with at least one news story. It's just the way of the world. You have a chat here, a chat there. And people actually quite often want to chat because news gathering is also a give and take process, which is they want to know what I know. On other respects, and they'll tell me something if I tell them something. So we're kind of bartering information, and it works out quite well.
I love the thought.
You've got to be at the races.
Yeah. So you are not like a neutrally kind of, oh, I just love everybody kind of journalist either. In the past, you've disliked certain team bosses, and you've been more than happy to say so. And there's your telephone. There's one of those bosses now. Is that Vijay Mallya?
No. Okay. No, it's actually an alarm saying that I should put the podcast on, but I don't quite know what's gone off now because it's already started.
Yeah, you would have
anyway,
been
there
late.
You go. Yeah. Go ahead.
If you dislike, a team principal, for example, does it make it more difficult to get information on that team? And does your relationship with the teams tend to dictate the stories that you
Not
put
really,
out?
Because generally speaking, if I dislike somebody, they're quite unlikable, and right. Then you'll find people in the team who will happily tell you stuff because they don't like the boss either. So I don't fall out with very many people. I try not to anyway. I have neutral relationships with one or two, and I have a couple of bad relationships at any given time. But if you're not being honest and critical, you're not doing the job properly. Yeah. And the correct reaction to that is to listen as opposed to be offensive to the journalist. So people who are offensive, people who tell me lies, what's the point in dealing with people who tell you lies? there's no point because they just mislead you. So at the moment, there's one team top person, let's put it that way.
Yep.
And I had a conversation about telling lies. And I said, three times I asked the same question, three times he lied. And the final time I said, look, if you tell me a lie, I know this is true. I know it's true. So you lie again, I'm not coming back to ask ever again. So that's your choice. Uh-huh. You know, make your own decision. He made the decision, therefore I don't go ask. So if he complains about, well, you got this wrong about my team, I'll say, tough, I don't believe you. Why would I talk to you?
Can you name which nine teams this isn't about?
I could, but I'm not going to.
Okay.
No, but it shouldn't impact on you. If you think the guy does a good job, even if you don't like him, that's fine. You should say that. There's people I don't necessarily like, but I say, okay, he's done a good job. But if there are people who are worthless from a moral point of view,
okay, no, savage.
There are Formula One attracts a certain kind of person, and some of them are completely amoral. And they will do anything for success. And therefore, if you believe that sport is something that is sporting, mm-hmm. These are the wrong kind of people. So you're bound to have some clashes along the way.
So there's some guesses in our live chat, but they're all the same person. So we'll probably just leave
Who's
it.
Who's that?
We'll
Go on, I'd love to hear.
Everyone's just saying Christian Horner.
No, absolutely
Oh,
not.
Really? Oh, okay. Well, there you go. No. Well, it just so happens that our next question does talk about a team. And I haven't picked this team to go to next because I'm trying to allude to anything at all. But Jasper just says, can Uncle Joe, I love that that's catching on, sign of respect, Joe. Can Uncle Joe give his take on the situation at Aston Martin? Otmar leaves. Vettel seemingly is unwilling to drive. The dreadful state, that's not true, obviously. The dreadful state of the car and the rumours about the team being fed up with Papa Stroll's continuous involvement in every discussion, technical or otherwise, basically telling people what to do. And Tyre Squirt says, we need info on what's going on with Lawrence Stroll. Why is he taking part in technical discussions? From the outside, Joe, it does seem a bit odd. That's all.
Most of that I would agree with. I don't know if he's taking part in technical discussions, really. If he is, he's nine parts bonkers. You can never have a team boss and a racing dad being the same person. It's a really bad combination. And even if Vladimir Putin hadn't invaded Ukraine, I think that was a similar problem happening down the road at Haas, where Daddy Mazepin was stirring the pot rather too often. Now, I understand it's their money, but you know, if you're gonna put money into a racing team and want to use it for something, you have to trust people to do it for you and do it properly, because you don't know. You may think you know how to do stuff, and there are some people like that who, you know, think they are God's gift to everything. And you know, some people might say that about Lawrence Stroll. But one thing I can say is that Lawrence Stroll's ability to have good relationships with people doesn't seem to be awfully strong.
So his recent, who was there before Otmar Schaffnauer? I can't remember the gentleman's name, but he...
Before Otmar?
Yeah.
That's like 15 years ago.
Yeah. Who was the team principal before that? Oh, I've forgotten who he is. Someone came out saying some tell-all story.
The last one would have been sort of Eddie Jordan, I think.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, they're not a team principal.
So long ago.
Someone lower down the chain. But that certainly seems to be the impression that's being given is that it's a difficult relationship from the top down. But if I'm the boss of Aston Martin, regardless of whether it's my son, I've put a lot of money into there. So should I not expect a little bit better than what's happening now?
No. If you're a rich person who's bought a team for your son, now, if the fundamental purpose of that team is to promote Aston Martin cars and not to give his son a racing car drive to play with, then that's fine. But, you know, you can spend all the money you want and bring in all the people you want, but will they create a better team than Otmar put together over 15 years? That's a very good question. You know, ultimately, maybe it will. Maybe if you put money behind the existing setup, you get a better result. Maybe you want to build a super team for the future and think you can do it. Fair enough. We'll see. Right now, it's not looking great. But that doesn't mean it won't be great. It depends if all the people you put together forge into a team or they don't. And one of the key elements in team building is to have drivers who inspire.
Yeah.
Now, if the team is not inspired by its drivers, one or the other, because be honest here, if I was running a team, I wouldn't necessarily hire Sebastian Vettel because he had his high points, but in recent years, he's made lots and lots of mistakes. So, you know, there, you have to be inspired. You have to go the extra mile with, you know, a driver who makes you want to do it. Now, my question is, do they have the right driver pairing? Now, obviously, Lawrence Stroll believes they do. I believe they don't. So there's a lot more people who I don't know, I think an awful lot of people feel the way I feel. But then again, what do we know? We're not his dad, you know.
No, we can wildly speculate, though. Sebastian Vettel lost out in the driver battle to Daniel Ricciardo. Hard to judge because that was the beginning of the turbo hybrid era. Struggled at Ferrari against Lewis Hamilton, spun lots, arguably lost the titles through mistakes, then got usurped by Charles Leclerc and beat Lance Stroll last season by 9 points only. And I know he had some time adjusting getting to that car. But I think you might have a point there, Joe, that Vettel probably, I know he's very popular, but he probably doesn't quite carry that four-time world champion tag in skill terms now, like present day.
No, I don't think. I mean, the thing is that Sebastian, all these guys are good. And I'm not saying that Lance Stroll isn't good, but not all these guys are the full package to be world champions and to be race winners. And that's the difference. You know, the whole way down the grid, you can find, I can think of only two of the current drivers who I would have questions about in the top cars. Look, Lewis Hamilton can't do anything in the Mercedes as it currently is.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
So you are car dependent to a large extent. Now, there are drivers who perhaps shouldn't be in Formula One and are there because they have rich daddies or whatever. But, you know, occasionally you'll have a rich daddy driver who is good enough. But generally speaking, one of the elements that is missing, and probably the key element that's missing from rich kids, is the desire to be successful, because they've always had it given to them on a plate. So one of the things about being a successful Formula One driver is having all the elements in place and have the desire to want it, not the desire to, I'll take it if it comes along, a sense of entitlement, you know, that rich kids have. The worst thing you can do for kids is to give them everything they want.
Yep. Well, whilst we're talking about paid drivers, Joe, look, I know what people are going to say to this. I know what you'll probably say to this, and it's going to be along the lines of, "'Twas ever thus, Niki Lauda was a paid driver, Alonso was a paid driver, they're all paid drivers." You know what I mean when I say paid driver. I mean someone who's literally rocked up to an F1 team, put a bunch of money down and paid for the seat. I know people get a bunch of support all throughout their racing careers, and even Lando Norris, you know, he was funded to go all the way up, but he was picked up by an F1 team and is paid. Surely, with the size of Formula One now being a truly global sport, an American-led sport, in and amongst NFL, basketball, all that kind of stuff, surely we can get past this point now where you can just pay to enter. I can't imagine paying to get into the semifinals of Wimbledon, paying to get on the LA Lakers. Surely we're coming to a point where this can end.
Yes and no, because an example of this is tennis. You know, if you're going to be a tennis professional at international level these days, you've got to go to all the right schools and spend your entire life doing it. You can't just be a normal person who picks up a tennis racket.
Sure. Now, but can I clarify, you can't then buy your ticket into the New York Open. You have to qualify to get there.
No, you have to have talent, but you know, that's what super licenses are. The fact is that some people can gain super licenses by being good enough, but not necessarily fully good enough. You know, so now you talked about Alonso having money behind him. He didn't. He started out with nothing, but he was picked up by Renault. Lewis Hamilton was picked up by McLaren.
Yeah.
Esteban Ocon. Yeah, almost all of them actually didn't from wealthy backgrounds. A few did, and some of them have that balanced with their abilities, and some don't. And so I think that, and their attitudes as well. You know, the attitude it'll just come to me because I'm a superhuman, you know, is not the right attitude. You've got to work hard. And, you know,
Yeah, go on.
To be able, I don't know what you're doing there.
Okay, do you know what it is, Joe? You're tapping the table, and I'm just thinking of my edit later. And I was trying to mime it to you that it didn't. But now everyone knows what you were doing. So you're back anyway. The internet just froze for a second. But you're saying, yeah, it's the attitude as well.
Well, the attitude is not as well. The attitude is key to success. The attitude is fundamental to winning. And you know, nobody wins races because they just happen to, well, maybe if I win a race, it'd be good. You know, they go out and they win races, and it means a lot to them, which is, you see, sometimes you think, God, that's an excessive reaction when a guy wins a race. But it's not for them, because their whole life is based on winning races. So, you know, and okay, you can say sometimes these race winners are a little bit lucky. So, you know, you can do the Gasly, you can do the Ocon thing. But what they've proved is that they can do it. When the situation is there, they can do it. Others haven't done that. So, you know, but I think you're right. I think that as time goes by and money becomes less of an issue, because we are getting to an age when Formula One teams will become or should become self-sufficient, then the choice of drivers, it can always relate to a profit margin. I suppose if a driver comes along and pays a lot and the team owner thinks, well, I'll just put that in my pocket, that's fine. But the fact is that if they want to be successful, you want the best possible combination of everything. So I think you're probably right. We will see fewer. We haven't got very many of them now, to be honest. There were three.
Yeah.
Now there's two. And of the 20, that's a small percentage, really.
It is.
If you want names, I'll give you names. Mazepin was one.
Yep, Latifi.
Latifi is one.
And Stroll
is the third one, yes.
Okay, so I'm really encouraged by the fact that when Mazepin dropped out, we didn't get a pay driver come in. We had Kevin Magnussen come in, who seems to be on the pace straight away. And I'm just like looking at the column two payments, and is that the one that's based on places? So if you finish a couple of places higher in the table, that's like, you know, can be $10 million, for example. So
no, it's not usually that high.
Oh, isn't it?
It can be five-ish.
Yeah,
sure. Up the top end, it can be 10. But the kind of guys who are driving at top end teams don't make that much difference. So, you know, so yeah, if Haas finished last this last year, they finished 10th, and this year they finished 5th. Mm-hmm. Let's just say that will be a massive, massive increase in revenue for them. That will be an extra 30 or 40 million, probably.
Yeah.
And that's a lot. So in that respect, you don't need a pay driver, because if Kevin Magnussen can come in and do that kind of a job, and also the other thing is to bring a team together, to make a team work. Kevin Magnussen is a guy that team love.
Yeah, they love him.
Yeah. They love him. And they love having him there. They feel that he is somebody who can lead them, who can make it happen. And perhaps they didn't feel the same way with Mazepin.
Is that a soft perhaps there, perhaps, Joe?
I was being kind. He's had a hard time of late.
So Mazepin gave about, what, 6-7 million for his seat? Roughly, ballpark?
I have no idea. Probably it sounds more. It doesn't sound anywhere near enough.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, it sounds like it's got to be double figures at least. Otherwise, you know, it's probably even more than that.
All right. Well, let's move away from pay drivers then. Feedback at missedapex.net. And I just want to make a couple of points clear, just to fend off any emails, is that I wasn't saying Alonso, Ocon, etc. were pay drivers. I'm saying is that people make the argument, oh, all drivers are pay drivers. So my definition is, if you are paid for who you are, you get the money for who you are, you're a pay driver. If you get funding because of what you can do, I don't class that as a pay driver. So maybe I need a different term to talk about what I'm saying. Because every time I say pay driver, I always get this. A, we've always had pay drivers. So we had really bad things in history. We got rid of them. And then the other one is, they're all technically pay drivers. Okay. So I'll try and head that off at the pass.
I think one thing that you should say is that in the history of Formula One, certainly as long as I've been around, which is rather a long time now, there's never been a more talented field of drivers across, you know, from one end to the other. They're still, even if they're paid drivers, they're still pretty good. They're not the full package necessarily, but they're much better than the old days when somebody would turn up with a pile of money and get given a car at the back and they'd be 5 seconds off the pace. You know, it's not like that anymore. You have to be good enough. And also you have to get a super license. And that's, you know, it's not easy to do.
You wouldn't want a pay driver coming in and just causing safety car after safety car, would you?
Nicely put.
Let's move on. Another question from the listeners. Okay, this is interesting. New teams. Let's talk new teams. Andrew Smith asks, Domenicali said that not only Andretti are interested in joining F1. Does Uncle Joe have an idea who these are? Audi? Rich Energy Honda? Who's coming in, Joe? And I just want to put in Barisman's question there because it's related. I want to know if there are any insights on the FOM's take on an 11th team joining the grid. But I'll add, 12th, 13th, how far could it go?
Okay, well, the rules and commercial agreements are very clear. It can go as far as 12. The commercial agreements mean that if you want to be the 11th or 12th team, you have to give the money up front to redistribute the prize fund. In other words, you have to provide sufficient money to pay what you will be taking out. In other words, it is to make sure that the teams don't lose out by letting somebody else in. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you're going to earn it back over time. So, yes, it's a high barrier of entry, but you don't want rubbish teams coming in. So, in fact, at the end of the day, it's not F1 Group who decide these things. It's the FIA. The FIA looks at people who are making proposals and say, this will work, this will not work. And they ask for all kinds of stuff. Now, Andretti is one team that everyone's heard of. And last I heard, Andretti was talking about basing itself in the United States of America. Well, that's a great big red sign. Great big red sign on that one. And I don't know if the FIA would accept that because it's absolutely guaranteed not to be successful.
You'd never get the staff, I suppose.
Well, you might get the staff, but you're in a very difficult position of not being in the cluster. You know, you can be in a cluster in Charlotte. You can be in a cluster in Indianapolis, but it's not a Formula One cluster. It's a different kind of cluster. So you can do, if you're Andretti, you can do the kind of deal that Haas has done. But Haas is based, the racing team is based in Europe. The construction of the cars are done in Europe. The only thing that's done in the States is marketing and a little bit of R&D, I think. So you have to have the right package. So if you go with the wrong package, they'll turn you down, even if you've got the money. Now, the other thing is, if they had the money, they would have bought a team when all is said and done. Mm. And, you know, we just have to wait and see about that. But I think that I don't know how long it'll take. I don't know how long it'll take. Sorry, I've just had a fascinating email that I can't talk about. It's strictly embargoed. It comes from Formula One.
There's a reflection in your glasses. Everybody zoom in.
Well, if you can read the reflection in my glasses, you can read what it said, but I doubt you'll be able to.
Well, do you know what? Do you know where the first place we'll hear that news is once we get it? Is on your green notebook or on your blog?
No, you may already have heard it.
Oh, okay. Well, where should we go if we want to check out your blog anyway, Joe? It's always very good when you're on the road.
Oh, joeblogsf1.com. That always works. And if you want to know what the embargoed announcement is, I'm sure if you troll around there, you'll find it. So
text me, Joe. I promise I won't definitely immediately tweet it.
We may have discussed it already this afternoon.
Oh, whoops. Okay. Oh, I see. Right. In that case, we probably do know what it is. Okay. Our holiday. It's me and Joe's holiday.
We did actually discuss more than one thing. We discussed several potential races.
Okay, so we've talked about Andretti. Mark is asking, is McLaren Audi still a thing, or is that off, or was it never on?
It's still in the
still bubbling.
Yeah. And well, if you look at the board of McLaren, go into a company's house and see who's on the board, you'll find two Volkswagen executives of previous generations who are already on it. So they're there for a reason. I think that it's perfectly logical. We just have to wait for the new rules, the engine rules for 2026 to come. And when we get those, I think you'll start to hear from Audi. I think you'll start to hear from Porsche, but I don't think Porsche will go with their own team. And I think Audi will try to buy McLaren.
Yeah, and just be called Audi.
That's another question. I don't know. Mm. But whatever, you know, it could be a McLaren Audi. But then you have a problem with the car company as well. So it's a bit complicated, that particular case. But there's also, I've heard of a couple of other groups out there But whether they're strong enough to really warrant inclusion in Formula One is another question.
Ah, speaking of another question, I've got a couple more to end on, Joe, if you've got the time, if you've got the patience. You've certainly got the expertise. Let's see, this might lead to a conspiracy theory. Just Marshall Rubin says, are the discussions between the drivers and the FIA regarding Drive to Survive and greater input on where the races are meaningful? So I think we've discussed and touched on the drivers' input in Saudi, so we'll sort of leave that. But I think the Drive to Survive influence is interesting. Can you predict where that might go, Joe? Because they're now talking about a team principal parade before one of the races. No one would have cared about a team principal parade if it was not for Drive to Survive.
Who's the biggest star in Formula One?
You tell me.
Well, it's Lewis Hamilton and Max Verstappen. But after that, who's the biggest star?
Well, it's been the Toto and Christian show, hasn't it?
No.
No?
No.
Who do you think?
It's the Gunter Steiner show.
Okay, fair enough.
No, he's the guy who comes out of it all with the nicest image of all. He's just a racer, crazy guy, character, strange accent. If you look at Christian, he sort of comes out as dastardly and everyone's looking for his Muttley.
Yeah, boo, you know? Yeah.
Well, Christian doesn't come out of it well necessarily. He might think he does. I don't know. I haven't asked him. And Toto comes across as being, you know, sort of very serious about what he does. And at the end of the day, the whole thing is good for Formula One. People who won't get involved in it are cutting off their nose to spite their face, if you like. And that's what Ferrari and...
Verstappen has said he won't do anything.
Verstappen nowadays. He'll still be there. He just won't be focused on. Now, and the argument there is that they're not presenting the image he wants to present. Well, yeah, perhaps, but for the good of Formula One, is Verstappen's image the same as Verstappen's image is on Netflix? I don't know. I mean, I don't know. To be honest, I find Max to be perfectly charming, but I know lots of people who don't. And I've known Max a very long time, so it probably helps. But, there's a lot of people who don't like the image he portrays or don't like the way he drives or don't like the way he answers. I don't know. I don't care, to be honest. But I think that Formula One has gained enormously from Drive to Survive, and we should all be part of it. If we can be part of it, and even if some of the storylines are a little bit contrived, and even if, you know, it does create an impression about people that perhaps isn't the reality, well, if you want it to be the reality, be part of it, you know, and make that personality part of the show, not allowing them to do what they want to do. So there's no way that Formula One's going to give up doing Drive to Survive. You know, it's a fantastic bonus for the sport. It's the greatest thing we've had for years in this sport. And
yeah,
we have a completely new audience as a result of it. And we have to make that audience stick.
The numbers bear that out. There is no doubt it's had a great effect. The danger is that the tail then wags the dog.
Well, tails and dogs seem to wag a lot in Formula One, don't they? So
maybe they're wagging together. Eyal Sion has a question. There's no way that's how that's pronounced, but I'm going to assume Welsh. So I hope this is a proper forum for a question. Yes, it is. There's a lot of talk about Verstappen's clean fights against Leclerc this season, as opposed to his dirty fights against Hamilton. And last year, the word respect was being thrown around a lot, suggesting that Verstappen doesn't respect Hamilton. Joe, what are your thoughts on this matter? Has he been reined in, Joe? Has someone said, you can't race like that this season? We let it go last season.
No, I don't think so. I think he's probably just... He is. He respects Lewis, and I think Lewis respects him. And they got very stressed at the end of last year. Everybody got stressed at the end of last year. The end of last year was a horrible time in Formula One. It was great for the sport, but it was not a pleasant place to be. And there was a certain element of bitterness going on from Silverstone onwards, and that was amplified far too much in some places in the media as well. So. But Charles and Max have been racing like that since they were about 10 years old. So they already know that they fell out a few times along the way. But fundamentally, they go to the limit and not beyond it. I think the difference between this year and last year was that Max had never been a world champion before.
Yeah.
And I think that he definitely felt aggrieved about what happened in Silverstone. But at the same time, I don't think that's necessarily 100% justifiable on his part, just as Lewis Hamilton could be upset about what happened in Monza. You know, there were at times when they both pushed absolutely to the limit. And some would argue that Max went over it on occasion. And a lot of people talked about Max in Saudi last year going over it. And it's really difficult to say where the limit is. That's the problem. You know, is putting your car where somebody else wants their car to be good racing, or is it unethical? And that's really a matter of degree. And you have to look at each individual incident and say, that's too much. But there is no, you cannot have a cut and defined line about what's right and what's wrong on every single issue. They're different. And that's why, I mean, I would say sometimes Max was, you know, this close and maybe even this much over.
Okay, for the audio but listeners, he's putting his fingers very close together. Because as far as they knew, you could have had your fingers very far apart. That's all. Just making it clear.
All right, sorry. I thought everyone was watching on television. So,
no, yeah. Mostly audio.
What do I know? And you're the technical bod anyway. So that's it. It's not cut and dried, but you can build relationships with race directors that will find the right solution. Now, Formula One and race direction is right now a humongous great mess, because the new system, they've thrown the previous one under the bus, and the new selection of people is confused. They're going to have different opinions, and I have still no idea what the eye in the sky does, or the virtual refugee, or not referee, that's the one.
Yep.
I have no idea how that could possibly work. And you're going to, if you have three race directors, you're going to have three opinions.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work. It's wrong. It's fundamentally wrong. You want to have one race director who has an opinion, and he is the right opinion, and you have to accept his. Otherwise, you're just going to get into a mess where people say it's inconsistent. I already heard Fred Vasseur saying it's not right that Guan Yu Zhou was given a penalty, because that's not how it was before. Well, that's inconsistency. That is highlighting the inconsistency of having different race directors.
I mean, Lance Stroll very clearly turned in on Alex Albon and got a penalty for, and it was Albon that got the penalty for going down the inside. No way that is going to be judged consistently like that all through the season.
Funny you should mention that, because I actually agree with you on that one. Mm. I thought that was, but they have more information than we do, to be honest. But it certainly looked to me like. It was at least it was 50-50, and at best I thought that Albon had just done a good move.
Yeah.
And I was a bit surprised, to be honest, but that's what it is. You know, they've got more. We have to respect people. If you go to, you can't go to race control, but if you go to race control and you see what they have, you think, how the hell can they ever get anything wrong? There's so much information. There's so much ability to change things. And there's so much talent too. I mean, that's the other thing. There's an awful lot of experience and there's talent. There's a lot of very, very good people involved. But I still think, even if there's good people, you need to have one consistent decision maker. Now, in terms of the stewarding, and that's a decision of the stewards, not the race director, the punishment, there are four major stewards, if you like, and they do a rotating, you know, whatever, seven or eight races each. Each year, so they're the most experienced ones, and the other stewards are generally less experienced, but some of them are drivers, which is important. And we have the same drivers keep going too, so it's kind of like two of the stewards are pretty well experienced people, and the third ones are generally experienced. The national ones are not, but then the national ones, obviously, they get outvoted if there's an incident, which is stewards decide by vote on these things. So. You know, if the local hero has a view, he might well be overruled if his view is not in line with everybody else. So I think it's a very good system. I think that you don't want to have a single permanent steward, because then you have bias in on it. But having four well-informed and interconnected stewards who discuss everything with each other, I think you're in a good place. But I think you need to have one race director.
Has did Lewis have a point when he talked about certain stewards travelling with certain drivers and being far too close?
Did he have a point? I'm just trying to think of any stewards travelling with drivers.
I think it was levelled at Derek Warwick was the...
Derek Warwick. I went out for dinner with Derek Warwick. Does that make me biased?
I actually went out
for dinner in Abu Dhabi with Derek Warwick two of the stewards. Does that make me biased?
Yes. I don't know. No. I'm guessing here.
No, it doesn't. Okay. It doesn't at all. It just means that I like having dinner with people who I'm around the scene with. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that, so long as it doesn't impact on your decision-making process. If I thought Derek Warwick had made a wrong decision, I would say, Derek Warwick, you made a wrong decision.
Well, it depends who paid for dinner, I suppose, doesn't it, Joe?
Not really, because, you know, you can pay for dinner sometimes, they can pay for dinner other times.
Yeah. He said, I'll get this, Joe, but when you go on Missed Apex, you make sure you say I'm a good egg. That's how it went down. I know.
That's not.
I wasn't born yesterday, Joseph.
That's not how it works. But if you want to believe that, that's up to you. There's a lot of tosh talked in the social media about this, that, and the other. But you know, who you go and socialise with is really irrelevant. You know, maybe it'd be a good idea if Lewis Hamilton went out to dinner occasionally with Max Verstappen.
Maybe.
They used to in the old days, drivers used to go out and have dinner together. Actually, they're quite close together nowadays. They're closer than they were in the past. But I think that just as in all matters in life, if you talk about things with people, the problems tend to go away.
Joe, do you feel like today I've just come across as just a generally better informed pundit? I'll say yes, this benefits you. Yes. Joe's saying yes. That's because you've been kind enough to be sending me your monthly newsletter, which you kind of give the inside and early scoop
on. My weekly newsletter.
Is it weekly, is it? I don't read so good, so I can only read it once a month. But it is an incredible news source. I know it's aimed at the industry, but people can subscribe to your newsletter.
They can.
It's a hefty whack.
If you want to know what's going on in the sport of Formula One and having it weeks ahead of everybody else, that's the way to do it. Yes, it costs money, but you know, you choose.
It's quite
a lot
of money.
You can go and eat ice cream every day of the year and spend the same kind of money. So it's up to you what you want to do. Okay. But if you want really good info,
where do people go on the internet?
Well, you
Joe?
Go to flatoutpublishing.com, which is really easy, and you look for a thing called JSBM.
Yeah, there you go.
And you can buy it. And it arrives on your desk at 9 o'clock every morning, on every Monday morning, after a race as well. And yes, it's an industry thing that industry people read, but a lot of fans read it as well. So
there you go.
Because they like to go down the pub and say to their mates, you'll never guess what's going to happen.
Yeah.
That's and it's a bit like, you know, whatever it is that I just got a message about. I've already written about that. So, you know, I'm not going to say what it is, but I've already written about it on a number of occasions. And I'm very happy because it makes me feel good. Look, I got something right.
Exactly.
No, but, you know, that's actually what I do all the time. My aim is to always get it right and always be ahead of the announcements.
And you are actually an independent content creator because you own and run GP Plus magazine, which is why you go to the Grand Prix. And we can subscribe to that. This is the best time to subscribe because you only do a year or nothing, don't you? Subscription.
Yeah, we do year by year subscriptions.
So 2022.
Earlier in the year. Yeah. The earlier in the year you buy, you still get all the magazines, but you get them when the races happen.
Okay.
As opposed to if you subscribe at the end of the year, you only get them all the old ones that have already happened. So, but it is absolutely the best time to, and it's 90 pages, 100 pages long, and it comes out about 6 hours after every race. I mean, what more do you want? It's got great photography. It's got opinions and stories. We have old-fashioned race reports so that you can actually remember what happened as opposed to the modern race reports you see in magazines where it's all bit points and paragraphs and you're trying to put it together later on. If you look back, you have no clue what happened in a race if you read a modern magazine because it's based on the theory that you watched it on telly.
And
so you, without the telly, you don't know what the hell happened because all you've got is a couple of, you know, sort of bullet points. And trying to remember how it happened is a bit difficult.
The thing I like the most about it is it's handwritten and personally delivered to your house by one of Joe's staff. Okay, go and search.
Handwritten It's in PDF format, or you can read it on one of those pagey turny things, which are jolly clever.
There'll be a link in the show notes below, if I remember.
Marvelous, marvelous. This is what we like to see.
Joseph,
put in a link to the JSBN newsletter too, because that is, you know, for super fans, that's the thing. Anyway, the other good news I want to just pop in at the end here is that now that the pandemic is beginning to get less serious, the original audience concept, i.e. meeting up and doing it live, is coming back. So if you are a fan and you want to come and ask me questions, I have one in Melbourne. At the end of next week, you come along, you ask loads of questions, you drink some beer or wine, depending on whether you're snob or not, and then you have a lovely time and everyone goes home wiser for it. And I go home happier.
I've been to those. I do enjoy them. But we're also going to be putting on our online version again. Now you have internet. Mm-hmm. But don't worry. I do the technical stuff for Joe. So he just says stuff. I just help with some emceeing.
Yeah, I mean, it is because I can't go everywhere because there's only so many hours in the day and so many days in the year. I think virtual audiences are a really good idea too. But I hope to do more this year, going to actually see people, meet people, because I get a kick out of that too. I may be a bit strange saying that, but in terms of Formula One mentality, where, you know, the fans are just sort of ghastly people, get out of the way. My view is, well, let's go meet a few and have some fun.
It is definitely good fun. Thank you for your time, Joe. Check the links in the show notes below. That's all we've got time for today. We'll be back on Sunday with a little bit of tech time, a little bit of driving focus, and also, of course, all the news that pops up between now and Sunday. Until we see you next, work hard, be kind, and have fun. This is Missed Apex Podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.